everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
So, Mara, we saw Linda Dano make her day's debut this week as Vivian, and I spoke to her for an interview in the new issue. Now, Linda said she had a great time there, and it reminded her of why she loves being a part of the daytime family and really how much she missed it. But she was also clear to point out that she is not taking the place of Louise Sorrell, who originated the role. Linda knows Louise. She knows this is Louise's part. She considers it like just filling in for a friend. But she did share a very funny story about her first day of filming. So she had studied all her dialogue, but she thought that Yvonne Guevara's character's name was pronounced Ivan and was only corrected when she got onto the set. So then she had to remember all of her lines, but she had to remember to change the pronunciation in her mind every time. And she said it made things definitely a little hectic. By the time she got back to her hotel room, she took a load off, for sure. But then I spoke to Sal Stowers, who played Lonnie, who told me a similar story, that she also got tripped up by his name because she thought it was Ivan.
You know, there's a saying about how you should never mock someone for mispronouncing a word because it suggests that they've only read it before and not heard it pronounced. And I totally felt for Linda reading that story because I can so understand how if you hear it in your head one way and practiced it that way and then you have to say it another, it would be very stressful. Marcus Coloma told me a similar story recently that part of the challenge he faced in adjusting to the role of G.H.'s Nicholas was being able to fake sort of a trip off the tongue familiarity with all these names that were totally foreign to him, like Valentine Cassadine, Lulu Falconeri, etc. And that the biggest challenge was his own character's name, which he had to state with confidence in the big scenes where Nicholas burst into Nina and Valentine's failed wedding and revealed himself to be alive. Nicholas Mikhail Stravosevich Cassadine. Like, try saying that like you've been saying it your whole life.
I mean, that is a mouthful. Now, our new issue is devoted to Valentine's Day, and Days in particular is really pulling out all the stops to mark the romance. So we're going to see Steve and Kayla say I do, Ben and Sierra will make a very special connection, and Lonnie and Eli will finally get their babies back. And, you know, it's great to be able to report such happy moments because I know Days fans have been clamoring for some. We will also see a showdown between Laura and Gwen, who now knows that it was Laura who kept Jack from her all those years. That is definitely going to be a tune-in. Young and Restless's Devon and Amanda will make love, which will not make the Elena Devon fans too happy, I imagine. But the Amanda Devon or Hillary Devon fans will be excited for that, I am sure.
Well, GH is going to offer up some romance for Valentine's Day as well, but as a cautionary note to fans, it's actually not going to air until the week after the holiday because there were some preemptions that pushed the show's February 14th into the week of February 15th. But I don't want fans to watch next week thinking that like the show forgot to get its Cupid on. Another thing going on that fans can look forward to, ABC Daytime fans in particular, is a huge reunion of talent from All My Children, GH, and One Life that will be streaming on Thursday, February 11th. So for many years running, you and I both got to be in the audience for the ABC Daytime Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS benefit concerts that would take place once a year at Town Hall in New York City. And it was always such a fun night, packed with great live performances by everyone from Susan Lucci to Tony Geary. So to help raise money for those affected by the pandemic, the band is getting back together for a night of music and new interviews as Susan and Tony are involved. So is Renee Elise Goldsberry, the Tony-winning One Life alum, Cameron Matheson, Vincent Irizarry, Chrishell Stouse, Cassie DePaiva, Brandon Barash, like just a whole host of stars. So while they will be raising money, and of course we hope that everyone who is able to donate will do so, watching it is free. So that's this coming Thursday at 8 p.m. ET. It's on the Broadway Cares YouTube channel. It's on the ABC app via Amazon Fire TV, Android TV, Apple TV, Roku, and also the local ABC station websites will be broadcasting it, so too will the Good Morning America Facebook page. So there are a ton of ways to watch, and it just should be like a fun, feel-good night all the way around.
It really sounds it, and I am so excited for this. I mean, Mara, I have so many incredible memories of going to the actual event through the years, and it feels like forever since we've seen, you know, many of these actors, mm-hmm. like, hi, Tony Geary, never mind seeing them perform. Well, that is not the only big event happening. On Friday, February 12th, we will see the return of Don Diamond to Young and the Restless, but as Bold and Beautiful's Bill. Now, we touched on this last week, but this week we have the man himself as our guest today to tell us all about it. So let's find out how Don Diamond felt about stepping back into Genoa City. Hi, Don.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning. Well, thanks for joining us again.
So good to be on your podcast.
We are so happy to have you. Now, obviously, it was extremely exciting news to us that we would be seeing you back on Young and the Restless, but this time as your bold and beautiful alter ego, Bill Spencer. So tell us how you found out about the crossover.
I believe it was my our supervising producer, Casey Kasperzik, that I believe that's how I first heard about it. He said that they had requested me over there. So initially I wasn't doing cartwheels. it was given how that all went down over there at the time 11 years ago, that was a hurtful, disconcerting, initially incredibly unsettling and uncertain time. And, it happened through no fault of mine, and won't go into all those details, but it's not like I left with the warmest feelings in the world. So initially I really wasn't thrilled at the prospect, but as soon as my intellect took control of my emotional response, those feelings changed. And when I heard I would potentially be working with Peter and Tracy, that certainly was exciting for me, and that kind of warmed my heart. Peter and I are just dear friends. Tracy and I have known each other since high school. So that quickly changed, and I was looking forward to it.
Well, when the news broke, obviously, like, Steph and I were excited, but the fan base in general was excited, and I think it speaks to the fact that YNR fans still hold you and the character of Brad dear in their hearts. You know, what does that mean to you 11 years down the line?
Well, that means a lot. As we all know, soap fans are incredibly loyal, and you build a relationship unlike in any other medium. And I still, of course, get comments about Brad on my Instagram. I certainly never thought that I would be doing a crossover, going back. How could I? I think for the fans, which is ultimately, what's it for? That's what that's what it's about. I just think how fun for them, and to be coming back as Dollar Bill, it's great. It's really great. Mm-hmm. And it's Dollar Bill. I mean, it's, as everyone will see, it's really him in all of his, arrogant, sarcastic glory.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think fans are certainly hoping for that based on the comments we've gotten. But let's first go back a little into your Young and Restless history. So when you joined the show, Brad was a gardener, inspired, as we found out, by the fact that Brett
Stephanie,
Bell was
Stephanie, yeah. It really bugs me when people say that he was the gardener.
Oh, what was he?
All right. He had many and varied responsibilities.
Okay.
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 He was the groundskeeper.
Okay.
Okay. Pool, hedges, grass.
Well, see, I would refer to him as the pool boy, but that was how I saw him in the beginning.
Yes. It's offensive, Stephanie.
Okay. Well,
it's offensive.
I'm so sorry. So
he had a much broader skill set.
That is definitely my mistake.
Okay. All right. I just had to get that off my chest.
So I will say then, when I spoke to Bold and Beautiful's executive producer, head writer, Bradley Bell, he told me that he was a gardener at the time that Brad Carlton was hired for all these varied responsibilities.
That's what I hear. Yes.
Which I was very tickled by. So now, what stands out to you about your early years on the show and finding your way as Brad?
Wow. So many so many things. I had had, you know, the relatively, you know, brief stint on Days of Our Lives, and that was not, you know, really a wonderful experience. Personally, yeah, something wonderful came out of that. Professionally, it was rough, and some of that was the way I was handled by the executive producer over there at the time, and some of that was of my own making, and my immaturity and lack of professionalism, and just being naive, really. So when I went over to Y&R, I certainly approached it, I think, with a lot more professionalism. I had the great gift of having Wes Kenny as our executive producer, and I'm sure you knew Wes. Was that before your?
I think it was before
your time. Well, Wes was just a great guy, a real man's man, incredible amount of experience, an actor's exec producer, really kind of a director, you know, really like a director. He just provided a really safe place for me to learn. And that's really what I wanted, what I wanted to do. And after I shot my first scenes, I hear a knock on my dressing room door, and it was Wes, and he came to me and he said, you know, really nice first day, just stay focused. Let's keep working hard and, you know, moving forward, but great job today. And that was such a complete 180 from my experience at Days of Our Lives. And, you know, having been an athlete growing up, you know, you get a foot up your ass by your coaches, but you also, when you're performing well, you know, that is for the best coaches, that's really acknowledged as well. And so I really appreciated that. And it's something that I understood, given that my background is really, you know, athletics. So I had a great love and respect for Wes. And he was there, I guess, for my whole first year on the show. Learned a lot from him. Learned a lot. And then the baton was passed to Ed Scott, who learned under Wes. And Ed, of course, directed my screen test on Y&R, and we still work together today. So that was a smooth transition. And working with Beth Maitland, who I love dearly, and she's such a tremendous talent and such a wonderful person. And even working with Terry Lester, may he rest in peace, who was not really warm and fuzzy, and did not make it easy for me. But that in itself was a tremendous learning experience, really a challenge, and really forced me to be extremely prepared for anything. And God, just everybody, you know, Eileen, and just so many wonderful, wonderful talents and professionals, and all the directors, Steve Wyman, who was directing Y&R at that time. And I would work with Steve outside of the show on my scripts. And he was really, you know, really good coach. And I learned a lot from Steve. So just very blessed, to be, in that circumstance.
Well, Brad was in a number of pairings that I remember with great fondness. So I think we should talk about some of the wonderful women, some of whose names have already come up, some of whose haven't, that you were with on Young and the Restless. Okay, so
I left out Jerry Douglas, by the way. Jerry, wonderful. Just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guy. Terrific actor, wonderful guy.
A guy you don't hear anyone say anything bad about, Jerry Douglas. Yeah. No. All right. Well, we'll continue. All right. So, okay. You touched on Beth Maitland, of course, a great history between those two characters. And you mentioned your friendship with Tracy Bregman, but tell us more about Tracy Bregman.
Well, Tracy and I literally were friends since high school. She was talking about it when we worked, you know, the other day, last week, that I had, you know, dated some of her friends.
Okay, I didn't know that.
In high school. Yes. Yeah, I think she mentioned their names, in fact, Lisa, Lori. Yeah. So she enjoys, you know, really enjoys bringing that up. But yeah, that's how far we go back. Wow. Maybe before, it might even be junior high. That we have mutual acquaintances. So that's a long time.
That really is.
And the poor thing has aged so poorly. Right?
It's sad.
She's really got to start taking care of herself.
I know. If only. Okay, so tell us about working. You mentioned Eileen. But let's talk a little more about Eileen and working together with her at Y&R.
Well, there are different incarnations of that, right? There was working with Eileen before we were in a relationship, and there worked with Eileen after when she came back, and they were very different circumstances. We kind of like to break each other's balls, in the earlier days of Y&R. But again, just really, really just so talented. But the work that we did when she came back, and we were married on the show and had the cancer storyline, that just a lot of the work we did was really, I think, wonderful. And again, just I'm just really blessed to have worked with such talented actors and actresses. And Eileen certainly stands out among them.
Well, Brad was also, involved with one Ms. Nikki Newman for a hot second. So tell us what you remember about working with Melody like that.
I hate Melody. Just the worst. Ugh, I got a headache just thinking about it. Melody, she's legendary. Melody is amazing, so funny, such a great sense of humor. We spent a lot of time laughing. But just really a blessing. But we laughed a lot.
Well, Heather Tom is someone who you certainly crossed paths with in Genoa City.
Oh, my girl.
Connected with, obviously, with all the beautiful. How would you describe sort of the, trajectory of your relationship?
So I'd been on, for a while at that point. I started in 85, so I'd been on 6 years. And I just so clearly remember seeing, her first day or those first few days and just marveling. You just immediately saw the exceptional talent that she was and is. And that certainly sticks out in my mind. And they kind of flirted with our characters on Y&R, but never really did any with it. And I guess when I was so, sorry when she left the show, and I would keep in touch with her and watched her work, and when she was in New York, and would always reach out if I happened to see something she did, and I would always reach out to her and let her know how wonderful the work was, or when she was nominated or won, I would just always reach out to her and keep in touch. And I guess when word got out that I was coming to B&B, Heather had emailed Brad, "I want Don Diamond." And I guess the story has been chronicled, right? I guess we know about this. So I was just so flattered by it. When somebody with her level of talent wanted to work with me to the point that she would reach out to the showrunner about it, that just really warmed my heart. And I was really flattered. And my God, she is in a class by herself. She is as good as it gets, both as a professional and as a person. And it has been just my great joy and great blessing to work opposite Heather. We laugh as much as we do these gut-wrenching scenes. And the best thing about her is. As talented she is, and she's just no pretense at all. I mean, she's just the best person to work with. So she takes her work obviously very seriously, but does not take herself too seriously. So I'd like to think we share that in common. But just my greatest probably professional blessing has been working with Heather.
Well, when Brad did have a very serious involvement with Victoria, it was when Amelia Hindley had taken over the role.
Yes.
About working with the not-so-shabby Amelia.
Not so shabby at all. Again, she is, just surrounded by them. I've really just been so fortunate. She, again, just another wonderful talent. Just exceptional, and as sweet as a human can be. She is just funny and kind, and I only have the fondest memories working with her. And I still, you know, whenever I see her in the hallway, or we bump into each other up in, you know, in the Palisades or whatever, it's just all it is uplifting to be around Amelia. Just such great energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did mention this at the beginning that it was a blow in 2009 when Brad was killed off. Certainly, Y&R fans were shocked and disappointed by it. But you had a very triumphant next chapter. Because Brad Bell snapped you up to play Bold and Beautiful's Bill. So what do you remember about those early conversations about moving across the hall?
Well, the earliest conversation, I think you know this, but the earliest conversation was minutes after I was fired on Y&R. It was as I was standing at the elevator, having just walked out of the Y&R production offices, and I'm standing at the elevator, a bit shell-shocked, and I just looked down the hall at the Bold and Beautiful sign, and I was like, f*** this. And I literally walked down the hall from the elevator, walked up to Erica, who was at the front desk, and I said, hey, and it was, you know, later in the day, and I said, is Brad still happen to be here? And she said, yeah, he's here. Well, I said, do you think, could you see if he has a couple minutes to talk to him and tell him I'm here? And she did, and Brad had me come into his office, and he was on a phone call with Michael Menis, and he joked around, hey, we'll get Don to jump ship and come over to Bold and Beautiful. Ah, ha, ha, ha. And that's literally what happened. Ah, he said, all right, Michael, I'll call you back. Let me sit down with Don. And he said, so, hey, what's going on? I said, well, your brother just fired me, and I'm looking for a job. And you could, like, pick him up off the floor. He was just – did not have a clue, totally shocked by it. You know, it's a long story, but we had a whole conversation about it. And he said, well, let me see if they're really married to this and what's going on. And maybe we can bring Brad over to B&B. I said, well, that will be challenging, Brad, because they're killing the character, who was named after him, as you already already pointed out. He's like, what? And he said, let me look into this. I'll call you. And this was the day before Thanksgiving, by the way. So he said, let me look into it, see what's going on. And called me Monday, and he said, yeah, they are. And he said, let me, let's just see if what we can do about this moving forward. Maybe I can come up with something. And I guess in the meantime, Eric Braedman, Peter Bergman, Michelle Stafford, Eileen, everybody had called, unbeknownst to me, had called Brad to say, you got to get Don Diamond on your show. Peter said, you need Don Diamond on your show. You don't have somebody like that. And Eric did the same. And I was just so moved by that, so moved by it. And, you know, there's some other stuff in between, but lo and behold, I get a voicemail from Brad, and said, hey, Don, it's Brad Bell, call me. And call me. And he left his home number, and I called him, and he told me that he created this character for me and described the, you know, gave me an outline of who he was and asked me if I'd be interested in playing it. And I said, can I have some time to think about it? He said, yeah, of course. And I immediately responded, okay, I thought about it. Let's do it. Let's go. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. But Brad, I've got to say, and I've said it a million times, and I always feel like I need to say this isn't sucking up, because it just isn't. It is fact. He has such a collaborative nature. You know, he was my champion, and he really, after giving me the outline, really gave me the ball and let me run with this character, from the way he dresses to the facial hair, to the demeanor, to the attitude, to just, I just really understood this, him right off the bat, and, really thought it was just so paramount that he look as different as possible. And given that, look as different and just have a different sensibility about him, given that I had just been Brad a few months before for so many years. And he agreed with all of that. And yeah, just really gave me the freedom to flesh out the character. I mean, that's what he paid me for, right? That's still what he pays me for, is to do that. Just the best guy. If I have a problem with the scene or something I'm concerned about, he's always there to talk about it. He might agree, he might disagree, but he is always available and just has such a wonderful collaborative nature and just secure enough with himself, you know, that that he's willing to talk and listen when there are concerns. And it's really been just to the absolute betterment of Bill's development over the years. So I can't say enough about Brad.
You've had such a great vantage point in your years at YNR and then B&B at front row seat to like the Bell family dynasty magic. I'd love to hear your thoughts and memories of Brad's parents, Bill and Lee.
Oh, I could actually just get emotional. You know, one of the things after I was let go at YNR, I had sent Bill a gift. I think it was a Christmas gift when I had left the show by choice after 11 years. I had just never been out in the business, and I just really kind of wanted the freedom to experience that. And I thought, if I didn't do it now, when would I do it? And so I had given him this gift, and this was, it was a fountain pen, an ink pen. And he wrote the note using that pen. And the last line, I won't read the whole thing, but the last line was, I miss you and your talent. Please know I'll always have a place for you on YNR. With great feeling, Bill. So I showed that to Brad, and he was really taken aback by it. Bill wasn't necessarily sort of warm and fuzzy in that, you know, with everybody. But I think because of losing my dad and my brother very early on in my tenure at YNR, which was extraordinarily difficult on me, and I think that Bill just had, you know, a bit of, you know, paternal feelings. toward me, I think we had a relationship maybe a little bit different than other actors on the show. He brought me up to his office at one point. It was either after my dad or my brother passed, and he just wanted to check in on me and see how I was doing, which I really appreciated. And so I had that note, and I showed that to him, and Brad was just really touched by it and taken aback by it, that his dad had actually kind of penned all that, you know, penned those, what he had penned and expressed those feelings. And so suffice it to say, I just have, you know, genuine love and affection for his parents, and Lee, always equally supportive. In fact, this is a great story. After I'd been airing on B&B for, you know, a few weeks, I guess. And I get a call from a number I didn't recognize, and I answer it, and it's Brad. And he said, "Hey, Don, I have somebody on the phone who wants to talk to you. He's your biggest fan." I was like, okay, all right, who is it? And next thing I hear is, "Don, it's Lee Bell, and I am your biggest fan. I just love what you're doing with Bill Spencer on Bold and Beautiful, and you just keep doing it." And it was like, and then so we talk a bit, and Brad gets back on the phone. He said, "Well, there you have it, from the co-creator. And it was very, very sweet. And I was so touched by that. And that was a real validation. You know, Lee was wonderful. I had more interaction with Bill than I did with Lee over the years on YNR. But it's like when Lee speaks, it's significant. You know, when she brings something to your attention, or she lets you know that she liked something or didn't like something, that carried weight. Mm-hmm. And for her to express herself with so much enthusiasm, that just meant the world to me. So I just really had so much respect for both of them and so much affection for them. And it was just a gift for me to work for the two of them for those many, many years.
Now, even though there was a possibility maybe of Bold and Beautiful when you left YNR, can you describe sort of what you went through after leaving YNR? You know, what kind of mourning process there was?
It was just hurtful and just so kind of out of the blue. And this is how I make my living and had for, you know, like 23 years or something. And even in those couple of years or year and a half, whatever it was, when I wasn't there, my character was still talked about. I was in touch with all my friends from the show. So it was kind of like I'd left, but hadn't really left. You know what I mean? And so now I was hurt. I was angry, out of sorts, unsettled. You know, now it was, okay, well, get an agent, start doing the actor dance, right? Start going on interviews and doing your thing. And that's what I was doing. I certainly didn't lay around feeling sorry for myself at all. It was just, all right, take that punch, get up, and keep rolling. And that's what I was doing. It's as simple as that. Tremendous support from my incredible wife and my children. Cindy was just amazing from the moment I was notified on the stage that they wanted to see me upstairs. I knew that wasn't good. And I called her from my dressing room before I went upstairs, and she was just, you know, hold your head high and you be you and everything's going to be fine. And you know, whatever happens. She was just amazing. Just really supportive through that whole process. And in fact, she was in the car with me when I got the call from Brett about Bill Spencer. So thankfully it wasn't very long between Brad's demise and Bill's birth.
So in terms of the pendulum's shift of emotion as well, what did it mean to you, not just that you got a new gig, but that Bill was such a hit, like right away, not just with Lee Bell, although, you know, not to knock the importance of that, but Steph and I were talking, I think last week on the podcast, about how really difficult it is to imagine the B&B universe for the last decade plus without your presence.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very sweet of you to say that. Let me try to take this in order. So yes, getting the job was incredible, but getting a job and keeping a job are two different things. Particularly when it is just all about, is the character going to work or not work? Also when you're an island, when you start a show, and for the most part, Bill really was an island. There was the sister, on the show, but she wasn't a presence. So Bill was really, an island. And, I was fully aware that getting the job is great, but keeping the job was another deal. And it's a half hour show, so there's only so much room on a half hour show in particular. And he had to be exceptionally impactful to be able to stick around. And I would be lying if I said that I didn't have that in my head. He had to really stand out. And who the guy was allowed for that, in terms of the outline of who he was allowed for that. And I just really saw clearly what I wanted him to be in exceeding Brad's expectations. And Brad made it very clear to me that he had very high hopes for this character. He needed the character to work. He had cast other actors in various roles, and they just didn't take off, didn't work for various reasons. So that was my mindset. Kind of Bill's mindset was my who Bill is was my mindset, which was win at all costs, take no prisoners. You know, if something's got to give, it's not going to be me. And so that was kind of the first part. What did you then ask me?
What the fan response meant to you? You know,
yes, of course. Yes. So I didn't necessarily know what the fan response was, you know, but I knew what Brad's response was, which was just, he was over the moon. And a Soap Opera Digest response was, I believe, was best new character.
Of course.
2009. People Magazine's response was the sexiest man alive issue.
Yeah.
So that all happened post being fired and then becoming Bill. Your guys' acknowledgement, People Magazine, other outlets, other media. So it was, it's real hard for me to put it in a word. It was really emotional. It was, professionally, personally, it just meant the world to me, and life-changing, ultimately, you know, life-changing. And then to have the character spawn the Spencers and, you know, the Spencer dynasty, I take tremendous amount of pride in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you remember having a feeling of, I think this guy's working, or like, this is going to be a thing, Bill's staying?
Yeah, I think in that first, over the course of that first story, when going after Eric Forrester, and Donna had to sleep with Bill, if otherwise Bill's gonna, you know, I just knew that was really, I knew it was working. I knew that Bill was different than any other character on the show, certainly other, and I could just, yeah, kind of get by the way he was being written and Brad's reaction and other actors' reactions that it was working. And I knew just from what I was doing, I just knew it was working. He was becoming exactly what I wanted him to be. And that could never just be villainous. You know, he had to be multidimensional. You really had to see the colors of this. Of this guy. And I think we were seeing it, and fans were just really being touched by him.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say, when you were like, I'm going to be honest, that stuff was in my head when I was creating Bill. I think that's something to wear with pride, because to me, that shows you're savvy from being around the world of soap opera and seeing people work and not work and people come and go. Like, you knew what you had to do. I think that that's very shrewd.
Yes, I've seen him come. I've seen him go. I've seen... worked with people that are like, why are you even an actor over the course of my career? This is too scary for you. Or, mm-hmm. you know, you don't bring anything to the table. Or, you know, again, I just had the benefit of working with really wonderful people. Yes, I had the benefit of a lot of experience by that time. And just life experience. Mm-hmm. You know, life is competitive. It just is. Mm-hmm. And you better... You better, and I talk about my kids, you know, with this, whatever you're going to do, you better be determined to be the best at it. Somebody always wants what you've got. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is. Right. The world is competitive, ever more competitive. Mm-hmm. So,
well, let's not give your bold and beautiful leading lady short shrift. We talked about your Young and Restless co-stars. We talked about Heather Tom and those. So let's talk about Catherine Kelly Lang and working with her.
Just another great blessing. Just, you know, stupendous talent, amazing. Again, just such a wonderful person, such a great sense of humor. What do I say beyond that? Kelly brings it all the time. You know, she just brings it and has as the face of the show. She has brought it from day one, continues to bring it today. And again, somebody who takes her work very seriously, but doesn't take herself too seriously. And I just so enjoy being in her company. And I mean, how lucky am I? Here it's Heather and Kelly, and these have been my leading ladies, you know, during the course of my time on the show. So just, you know, the luckiest guy in the business.
Mm-hmm. And you got to add the lovely Jacqueline Kennis Wood to that list.
Ah, yeah.
Right? Yes. Fans are going to want to hear from that.
What am I thinking? Well, you've just thrown so many women at me. Hard to keep track. Okay, that's a bit different. That's a bit different because I have watched, in Jackie's case, really watched her turn into the powerhouse that she is today. You know, she was a kid when we were working together and learning, like I was at that time in my life, right? And you could see that she had so much raw ability. And when she really began to connect emotionally to material and just mature as an actress and grow as an actor, like you watched it right before your eyes. And she's so beautiful. And then to back it up with that talent. What a combination, right?
Right.
And we've seen that. We saw that in the last, really, truly, in the last couple of years on Full Tilt. Just again, right before our eyes, to watch her blossom extraordinarily. And it's just been just a great gift for me to work with her and watch the process at the same time. And she's so freaking funny. She is. She's just so funny. Again, you know, beautiful and talented and the best person. Mm-hmm. Just the best person. She's wonderful. It was pretty funny because when she had been nominated, that would have been year before last that she won, right?
Yeah, 20.
Year before last, I think. And I was so excited for her. And I think, was Heather nominated as well that year or no? I don't remember. I think she was, maybe. I think she was.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but
Well, yeah, I'm sure you can research that. Yeah, look it up. I believe she was. So I was like, oh God, I'm betwixt and between. But I did feel like this is going to be Jackie's year. So I was there, and I think I had presented with Darren that year. So I was in my seat, and I was just starving. And I knew that her category seemed to be a bit down the from what I looked at. Okay, I have time to quickly, you know, get to the green room, grab just something to eat, and then get back to my seat. So that's what I do. Cindy's there. I make my way through the corridors, around the back, you know, through hill and dale to get to the green room, thinking, but I'm good. I've got time. And I'm standing in the green room, like, with the pizza in my mouth. And then I see the monitor. And the best actress, I'm like, I must have looked what's the character?
The Roadrunner.
Wiley Coyote. And the Roadrunner, thank you. And the Roadrunner were like, my feet went up in the air and like they were spinning and I wasn't going anywhere. Literally, no exaggeration. Almost knocking a couple of people over as I make my way to get back to my seat. And I sit down right as they are about to announce. And sure enough, it's Jackie who's seated just in front of me. And I was just over the moon, absolutely over the moon, overjoyed for her. And she she shouted me out. I was obviously very involved in that storyline. And she shouted me out, which is very sweet. And then it's on my Instagram. I went backstage as soon as she walked off stage. I wanted to run back and hug her, congratulate her. And we have a beautiful picture with her holding her Emmy. And it was so sweet. She said, you know, I got up, I was so nervous. And she said, I looked at you smiling at me and, you know, just giving me the you did it. So she said, it just calmed me right down. As soon as I made eye contact, you would calm me down. So, you know, I really felt like I was part of it leading up to her, of course, winning, and so happy to be there to support her and then to get that picture with her backstage. So, yeah, with Jackie, it's been a little bit different than everybody else, just watching her tremendous growth as an actress over the years. And every plaudit she gets is so well deserved.
Did you ever reunite with the pizza you abandoned?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure I did. I don't remember, but I would imagine that at that point, then I was like free to go. And, well, then I had to wait just in case. I think I had to wait at that point for, you know, just for the show. So to see who won. So, yeah, I don't remember if the pizza fell by the wayside. Or not.
You know, I just need to know that you got fed. So, you mentioned, of course, that the success of Bill, begot the Spencer family, taking prominence on the show. Do you ever take the time to lord it over Scott Clifton and Darren Brooks that they wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for that?
All the time. Every chance I get. Yes. Without me, you are nothing.
Yes,
if they're giving me a hard time, yes, I take every opportunity to remind them that they need to, you know, kneel at the altar of daddy. I put that in on the show, you may notice often, but you know who your daddy is. Yeah. So there are certainly elements of my sarcasm that very much contribute to Bill and his interactions with his children.
Well, sarcasm is a beautiful quality to bring to anything, I think.
Yeah. Definitely a key element of Dollar Bill for sure.
So how often had you been to the Y&R set since you left the show?
Well, the set, yeah, I've gone over there a couple of times, like for anniversary, you know, for Mel's anniversary or right. Eric's anniversary or Peter, you know, for something like that. Mm-hmm. I've walked over to the set.
And was there ever like a weird feeling in doing so, that place that was so familiar? Or no, you had no hard feelings towards that room itself or that floor itself?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Yeah, when I would walk through those doors and all of us would be standing over there, just a bit, not an overwhelming, not, you know, just kind of a, you know, just kind of a little weird walking, yeah, being over here again.
So tell us what it was like to actually like walk back onto the Y&R set to film.
It was, well, when I initially went over, it was sort of just a bit unsettling. It's not the same place that it was when I was there. And when you have a director introducing himself and the producer is introducing herself and so nice to have you. that was just a different experience. So, I think unsettling is sort of, you know, the right word. But when it came down to shooting the scenes, it was great. It was at once, particularly with Peter and Tracy, it was at once like so much time had gone by and like no time had gone by at the same time, even though a different character.
Right.
Kind of weird. And that's really the best way that I can say it. It was, wow, this is just odd and strange and feels like this was ages ago and yesterday at the same time. So Peter in particular, you know, really Peter, because Peter, we worked together so much.
Yeah.
And we used to joke that at one point, it's like we run every magazine cover together, every single one. So we were a super couple. And we joked about that. So doing this again with Peter just warmed my heart, and having him walk into the scene, which is how initially we see Jack and Bill's interaction, was just so fun.
And it sounds
Back to the Future.
It sounds to me from the happiness I'm hearing that Y&R did a good job of staying true to Bill and capturing Bill's essence in the scripts.
Well, honestly, that when I initially saw what had been written, it was more generic. It wasn't really Bill. It was just kind of this guy, generic version of, oh, hello. Ah, nice to see you. Nice to see you again. Ah, you know, hello, Jack, a little bit. Yeah, it was kind of that. And I called Josh and Josh Griffith and Tony. And I had expressed that, you know, if we're going to do this, he's got to be full blown Bill, Dollar Bill. And in sort of all his glory, like I described to you before, not even really like the Bill that is on a B&B right now with the Bill. I want my family back and I want you back and I'm sorry and I'm do better. And I, you know, all of that. I had to give myself, well, what reason does he have? What does Bill have to go to Genoa City for? Right. So for my backstory, it's, well, Bill's going to go, he doesn't want to do it on a Zoom call. He doesn't want to send his children. Bill wants to go to pee on his territory. Bill wants to go to mark. Yeah. He wants to go mark his territory. If there's going to be this collaboration, he is kind of going there to lay the ground rules. And B. Bill and all of his, let's just make clear who the alpha dog is here. And yeah, as I said, just kind of lay the groundwork. Why else would he possibly go? And I also thought it was more interesting if there was some history between these characters. It wasn't, you know, with the Lawrence Fenmore character, maybe it wasn't just there was a sort of a cursory handshake meeting from years gone by. And the same thing with Jack. I liked kind of establishing that there maybe was some kind of history with Lauren and some kind of history with Jack, and something where the audience would be entertained. And I say this all the time, you know, I kind of don't just think of myself as an actor, but an entertainer. And scenes need to be fun and interesting, and a certain dynamic has to be present so that those scenes are entertainment for the audience. And that's kind of what I wanted this to be if we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. So Josh and Tony were wonderful, and we just changed things up to establish, oh, there's some history with these characters. Interesting. And it allowed Bill to be Bill. So wow. I won't say more than that. I'll let you guys see that for yourselves. I mean, and that, again, that's my job. My job is to make it fun, have a dynamic present, make it interesting. And if you guys want to bring me over there, then I just want to do my job. And well, let's collaborate and make this something really fun and interesting and entertaining for the audience to watch and the fans to watch.
Well, would you go back if asked?
Yeah, if it's what I just described, sure. If there is something interesting that's being written and something that I can bring to it, where he's not this homogenized version of Bill, but he is the dollar bill that everybody knows and loves and hates, then sure. Yeah, sure.
Tell us what we can expect to see happening on Bold and Beautiful with Bill.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic because Bill is on B&B, as we know, he is has tremendous clarity about his feelings for Katie, about his recognizing what she means to him, his love for her, that she's ultimately the best thing that ever happened to him. And he's got to stop with his self-destructive nature and never being able to get out of his own way. And I think what informs ultimately Bill's emotional challenges and his self-destructive nature is that he really does not feel worthy. For all of his bluster, he's a bastard child, and he does not, he is constantly having to prove himself and prove that he's worthy. So he gets in his own way, and he's really trying to get a grip on that, as we are seeing in the air shows. So at the same time, he goes over to Genoa City, and that's a professional circumstance where he's going to go over there. Why else would he go there? Didn't he just do a Zoom call? Why didn't he send the children? Because he wants to go mark his territory and let everybody know, you know, you're getting into business with me. I'm the big dog, and I'm going to kind of knock you off your feet, keep you unsettled. And that's why, for me, that's why he goes there. I couldn't think of any other reason for Bill to go to Genoa City. And you'll see that. And I think you will see that right off the bat. It's, you know, he's in the ring and he's throwing jabs and just wanting everybody to know that he's present.
Mm-hmm. As only he can.
He just wants to make people kind of unsettled and maybe be a little bit wary, but he just goes and he has some fun with the folks over there.
Well, sounds great. We certainly look forward to seeing you on both shows. So everyone tune in on Friday, February 12th to see you, Young and the Restless, for the first time since 2009.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. Tune in, everybody. It's going to be fun.
Well, Dami, thank you so much for joining us and talking to us and spending time with all these stories and telling us what's going on with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Dom Diamond for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.